How obvious.
I see.
Well, you were walking through the ruins, so how about a horse?
6 horses. 1 for each of us.
You're not teaching us how to fly, healer, or to make blasters out of sand. I'll pay no more than 2 horses. Take it or leave it.
And I say 5, and you say 3, and I say 4, and then we dicker for a while and agree on 3 with bridles and saddles. So how about we shake on that and skip all the haggling?
Done.
Shaking the man's hand, Mildred could feel his tremendous physical strength. The fingers were like iron. He could easily crush her fingers as if they were matchsticks, but instead he was gentle, almost tender. Impulsively, Mildred met the Baron's gaze and saw something there that spoke of matters as old as time itself. J.B. added his hand on top of their grip.
3 horses? Hey, that's great. That's a fair deal, Millie. Well bargained, honey.
Reluctantly releasing his hold, the Baron diplomatically said nothing as J.B. slipped an arm around Mildred's waist. The healer was already taken. Such a shame. She was fit to be a Baron's wife. The rows of shops and homes stopped, and the group started along a flat road that led between the greenhouses, the slated glass roofs sparkling in the dying sunlight. A wire netting fence protected the greenhouses from windblown debris, along with any possible jacking of the veggies by rats. Inside the glass buildings, teams of civvies watched the companions go by and nervously tightened their grips on the crude tools used for tilling the dark loam.
Greenhouses.
Eat nothing until we're sure there's no wood chipper.
The previous year, they had encountered a madman who ruled a nameless vill in the deep desert. The insane Baron had also used window glass from some nearby ruins to build a score of greenhouses and protect the crops from the acid rain. However, he made the all-important soil by mixing garbage with boiled night soil and human flesh, minced in a pre-dark wood chipper. Thankfully, there was no sign of a wood chipper in this vill. Then again, maybe it was just out of sight at the moment. Leaving the questionable greenhouses behind, the group started across another flat, chilling field. Circles of defense. Straight ahead, Ryan could see that the 3 pre-dark buildings formed a lopsided triangle around the Tucson Square. The open area held a stone well, a gallows, and another firing wall. A scattering of people were lounging about, some of the civvies rolling dice, others smoking corncob pipes, and a small group of sect men stood near a whipping post with a disheveled man, his wrists bound in heavy rope, his head lowered in submission. Close by, there was a thick wooden post embedded into the ground, with iron rings dangling from the rough-hewn top. As the Baron came near the group, the prisoner raised his head, and O'Connor stopped in his tracks.
Explain why my nephew is being punished.
Baron, Sec Man Davies broke ranks and ran away during our fight in the ruins.
You mean that he charged the stickies by himself?
No, sir. He dropped his blaster and ran away.
I see. Did you recover the blaster?
No, it fell down a grating.
Davies was shaking all over now.
My hands! The stickies! My lord, they were everywhere! Uncle, they were throwing spears!
The civvies stopped rolling dice at that remark and looked about frantically.
So the civvies don't know about the stickies getting smarter. That's mighty interesting.
Sure is.
My lord, are the stickies using spears now?
No, it's nothing to worry about. We killed them all.
O'Connor walked closer and took the prisoner by the collar to shake him hard.
Shut up, fool. Never speak of such things in public.
Releasing the fellow, O'Connor stared at the bound man, his anguish and indecision plainly readable.
It was all a mistake.
50 lashes for running away, and 50 more for losing a blaster.
100?
My lord, no one has ever survived that many strokes. Perhaps we could...
You heard the ruling. The same laws for all men. There are no exceptions. None. Not even for those of my bloodline. Such as it is.
Saying nothing, Mildred and Doc both looked sick at the dire pronouncement, but the rest of the companions accepted it without a qualm. For sick men, discipline was a hard fact of life. When Ryan and J.B. traveled with a traitor, they had both chilled people for cowardice or some other crime, theft, drunk on duty, or rape. The weakness of one guard could get everybody else killed in their sleep. The sec men stood strong, or the vill fell. The equation for life was as simple as that.
Proceed with the punishment at once. If... If my nephew lives, take him to the Citadel to recover. If not, inform my sister and burn the body outside the wall.
Uncle!
Davy struggled against his bonds. But the Sekhmen holding him were much larger, and both knew that if the prisoner should escape, they would take his place on the whipping post. On the roof of the three buildings, Sekhmen stood with long blasters in their hands. The scene occurring below was none of their concern. They watched the walls and the sky. Clouds were gathering on the horizon, and rain was imminent. Whether or not it was acid rain could only be told when the first telltale whiff of sulfur was carried on the heralding wind. The Baron started toward the central building.
This way to your rooms.
Watching the one-armed man walk away, Ryan knew that the Baron was trying to show he had no feelings on the matter, like any good ruler. The law was the law, period, end of discussion. But O'Connor's posture told the world how deep was his sorrow at the craven act of cowardice. Ryan tried to imagine what would have been his reaction if he had been in the Baron's place, but found the idea impossible to conjure. His nephew Nathan was a Cawdor, and would gladly die to protect his vill.
Uncle, please!
Tie him to the post.
Sterling went to the wooden stake and removed a coiled length of leather from a peg. The two guards shoved the prisoner along and lashed his bound wrists securely to the iron rings. With his hands raised, Davies barely reached the ground, his boots resting on their toes. Crossing to the whipping post, Doc pulled an empty leather ammo pouch from his pocket.
Bite hard on this. It will stop you from screaming.
Panic was wild in the Sekhmen's eyes, but Davies opened his mouth and accepted the gift.
Be sure to count between the strokes, then tense before each one hits. It will make them hurt more, but do less damage. Be brave, and you will live.
Starting to drip sweat, Davies nodded in reply. Darkness swept across the vill as the setting sun moved behind some clouds, the shadows rich in wild hues. The civvies on the square started to leave, casting fearful glances at the rumbling sky.
Sir, is that allowed? The Outlander giving Davies...
Sterling cracked the whip on the ground. Dust puffed up from the hit.
What Outlander? There's nobody here but you two, me, and the prisoner. Right?
Absolutely, sir.
Good. Okay, let's get this started.
Pulling knives, the two guards started to cut away the bound man's shirt, exposing a back already covered with old, badly healed scars. Obviously, this wasn't the man's first taste of punishment.
Let's go.
But Doc stayed near the prisoner, watching the preparations. His hand began to move toward the blaster on his hip.
Now, Doc.
Almost reluctantly, Doc let go of the Lama and rejoined the others.
Barbaric.
And not necessary. Davies should have been quietly aced in the ruins. A public beating like this only makes the civvies nervous.
Bad for the veal.
Good God, sirs, is that all torture means to you?
This isn't torture, Doc. Just punishment. Besides, I really don't give a flying fuck what they do to a bastard coward. A Sekhmen who runs is worse than any invading Coldheart.
I took 60 once. Passed out at that point, and they let me be. Even Court Strasser had a touch of mercy.
Or maybe it wasn't any fun for him without a scream.
Doc said nothing, but nodded solemnly at the possibility. That was a part of his life the time traveler would rather forget entirely.
At least we can be sure there's no wood chipper. If they didn't feed the idiot into a grinder for this transgression, then we're safe enough.
I guess so. But it's a hell of a way to find out.
As the companions entered the front doors of the middle building, lightning flashed in the distance. There could be no doubt that a storm was brewing in the north, and that it would arrive very soon. Swirling electronic mists filled the Matran's chamber, building, increasing, sparkling with a million tiny star points of bright light. Then, just as quickly as it appeared, the quantum fog sank into the solid floor, exposing the man called Delphi. Striding from the chamber, he briskly entered the antechamber, the bottom of his white robe moving around his moccasins like foaming water. Delphi had checked the chamber and couldn't find any trace of the jump sickness that hit unauthorized travelers, which meant that either Tanner and his people had solved the secret of a controlled jump, or this was one of the many traps laid throughout the system for the escaped prisoner. Checking his palm monitor, Delphi saw that this color redoubt was in Arizona. The Zone, as it was called in these barbaric days. He almost smiled. The Rogans were very close. Soon, Tanner would be captured alive, and then... Delphi eagerly entered the control room and stopped. Kicked into a corner was the smashed remains of a probe droid, a USB cable lying nearby. Kneeling on the floor, Delphi gently laid out the largest pieces, trying to reconstruct the device. A lot of the camouflage chassis was reduced to pieces too small to utilize, but a few chunks were relatively intact. A neat hole penetrated the chassis on one side, the other totally smashed. Then, among the circuit boards and wires, he saw an irregular lump of metal that was clearly a bullet. The cyborg boosted his vision and swept the room, but couldn't find the ejected brass from a pistol. Didn't Tanner use a black powder weapon? No, wait. The albino and redhead carried revolvers. Mystery solved. The machine had to have found Tanner, but his companion shot the probe before it could link with the main computers and relay a message to Operation Kronos. Slowly, Delphi stood. Excellent. The less Kronos knew, the better it was for Titan and for Department Coldfire. Going to a security outlet, Delphi jacked himself into the system, and his left eye began flickering through the video cameras, secreted in every room. Soon it was obvious that Tanner and his people weren't present. Then he found the broken Vulcan minigun and checked inside the deep storage locker. As expected, it had been looted. Switching to an external view, Delphi cursed internally at the sight of the exploded U.S. Army Hummer inside the ruined tunnel, a Basilisk-class Guardian reduced to its smashed cybernetic framework. Oddly, the Guardian hadn't been killed by implosion grenades. Then Delphi realized the truth. They had sent the Hummer through the blast door loaded with high explosives. Damn, these people were smart. Perhaps too smart? Changing to the exit door of the tunnel, Delphi couldn't find any indication that Tanner had departed the tunnel this way. Strange. Backtracking through the entire length of the access tunnel, Delphi paused at the side of a ragged hole in the flooring. An explosion crater. He tried to get a view into the depths, hoping to find the rotting bodies of the people, but the angle was impossible. No choice, then. Disconnecting from the system, Delphi left the control room and headed for the elevators. Wherever Tanner went, Delphi would follow. But first... Using his cybernetic implants, Delphi mentally sent a string of encoded commands to the main computer of the military redoubt. A few moments later, a hidden wall panel slid aside on the bottom level, and another Basilisk-class Guardian rolled into view, the gelatinous bioweapon moving to rendezvous with its new master. The bright light of alcohol lanterns illuminated the interior of the Tucson building. Ryan couldn't see the Baron anywhere. Baron O'Connor either needed to be alone right now, or he had more pressing business at hand. Most likely it was a mix of the two. An old woman shuffled forward with a lantern in her hand. She smiled, displaying a mouth with several missing teeth.
Good evening, honored guests. I'm Suzette, the head maid for the Citadel.
Her dress appeared to be made of window drapes, and her moccasins were worn thin in spots, but she was clean, well-fed, and a large machete hung at her side. Obviously, this was a highly valued member of the staff. Few barons armed their maids.
Good evening, dear lady.
Unaccustomed to such things, Suzette blushed at the courtesy.
Please come this way.
The old woman started toward an open stairwell. The door had been removed, and the concrete steps were covered with red carpeting, that looked like it came from a movie theater.
The Baron has given you a room on the second floor, which is quite an honor. That's where his family lives.
Ryan brushed back his thick black hair. Honor his ass. The truth was that the Baron just wanted to keep the companions under observation. Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer, as the ancient saying went. At the first landing, Suzette pushed open a door adorned with a painting of a screaming eagle, then entered a hallway well lit with lanterns set into wall niches with pieces of mirrors behind. The reflected light filled the hall, bright as any halogen or fluorescent tube inside a redoubt.
Somebody must have read the biography of Thomas Edison.
I can only agree, madam.
At the far end of the corridor were several armed men behind a sandbag bunker. A pair of drapes was pulled apart to reveal a door bearing the eagle design, only done in more colors and in much greater detail.
Ha! The West Wing.
Suzette went to a door bearing the hand-painted sign, Royal Guest Room.
Oh, no, madam. That's the south side.
Ill-amused, Doc bit his tongue at the horrible spelling. To say anything wouldn't have been polite for a guest in any century. Going inside, Suzette hurried about lighting more lamps, then removed several tiny pre-dark bars of hotel soap that she laid reverently on the washstand next to a crystal punch bowl, along with a matching carafe filled with clean water.